Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The concept of a town hall, I think, is to have an open public forum. Yeah. And this sounds like a very tightly controlled audience and list of questions. Why do it that way? Why not?
How about we do this? How about you can ask me that question tomorrow based on what questions were asked rather than pre-selecting your question based on something that may or may not come through. Why?
Even midstream media in the form of the far left wacko lunatic from, I don't know, from where, Helen Thomas, the 89-year-old crone, the liberal crone, even she's complaining that the Obama administration is controlling the press in a way that even Nixon didn't dare to do. So believe me, you are having an effect. Even Chip Reed, anyone with a name like Chip, okay, even Chip Reed tried to stand up to that hack, the spokesmouth for Karl Marx Jr., and the spokesmouth for Karl Marx Jr. continued to spin, even though the press corps started to stir in the background, the peanut gallery even started to stir. But when you see a far-left lunatic like Helen Thomas, who hates anybody patriotic or conservative, starting to go after Obama's flack, you know that they're onto the fact that he is out of control with his propaganda. Now, I want to show you something. Look at the stories that your local channel, your local newspaper, are not covering. One, U.S. soldier captured in Iraq. Bonnie Frank wants to steal TARP money from taxpayers. North Korea fires 4 missiles and Obama does nothing. Wall-to-wall coverage of Michael Jackson, a solid week with no break. And even the aging leftist Helen Thomas thinks Obama's control of the media is worse than Nixon's. And finally, the British government, in a conspiracy with the United States government, is saying they had no discussions with the U.S. government about banning Michael Savage in the U.K. These are all very important stories, and I want to show you what's on the local San Francisco website that used to be, it wasn't ever really anything but a left wing, okay? But now it's, you know, it's reached such a point where it's lower than a high school level website. I'm not going to make any of this up. Here is what they are covering on SF Gate in order to continue to blind the blind here in the Bay Area. One, when I get free miles is no longer a good deal. Fisher's abandoned plan for Presidio Museum. Tiny Kitchen Confidential. Man arrested in rodeo dragging death. Dad is that Miss Defiante. These are the headlines from a local newspaper that used to be a reasonably decent newspaper in the 70s. This is a Hearthstone newspaper. It got so bad that they even fired Phil Bronstein, hoping that it would get better, and it got even worse. If you could believe it, in other words, it got worse when Bronstein left. I've never seen anything like this. There's not one report of U.S. soldier captured in Iraq. Bonnie Frank wanting to steal TARP money from taxpayers. North Korea firing missiles and Obama doing nothing. Helen Thomas, a leftist lunatic, saying that Obama's control of the media is worse than under Nixon. None of that is covered. And that's why the Obama administration, which is the most corrupt, closed administration in American history, is still able to get away with what they're getting away with. All the while, Nancy Pelosi goes shopping on shopping sprees. Play Beyond the whatever, the Blonde, the Blonde, the Blonde Sea, or whatever that was.
If I could fly like birds on high.
Roads are empty. No one's around. I don't know what I'm so excited about. I feel like a kid who's left. I'm the only one left in the media. I'm the Lone Ranger. Everyone else is on vacation. Can you believe it? Where do they all go? Why do they feel they have to go somewhere for July 4th? Do you feel you have to go somewhere for July 4th? Like a schmuck? Why do you have to go somewhere? You mean where you live is so bad you have to go somewhere? Then why do you live there? Why don't you live where you go to? then you wouldn't have to go anywhere. You could save money. What is the? Why do you have to go somewhere on July 4th like a putz and watch fireworks? I don't understand this. Everyone's somewhere. You go on the road, they're empty. Everyone went somewhere. Where are they? What are they doing there? What are they doing that's so refreshing? Nothing. Same thing they did when they were home. Watch television, argue with each other, and put the kids on Ritalin to shut them up. I've never saw anything like this nation. That's why Obama can get away with what he gets away with. He's a perfect reflection of the times. So why should I get excited is the question. I think I'm going to go away somewhere tomorrow. I am taking off tomorrow. I'm going to do a best of. And I'm going to go somewhere. You don't care about anything. You don't care about anything. Why should I care about anything? I should die for your sins? You want me to crucify myself every day? If Obama can send the Navy around, they may as well take the propellers off our warships and turn them into just floating brothels, which is what they've become by and large with coeducational naval personnel. Ask anyone who's really there and will really tell you the truth. They're floating brothels and pregnancy boats right now. Here you have the U.S. Navy, once the greatest Navy in the world, reduced to traveling around, following a North Korean ship and doing nothing. And they say, well, we put up a missile defense shield in Hawaii, and if he ever does anything, we'll use it. But he did it, and we didn't do it because we weren't ready, and it didn't really threaten. We didn't need to fire the protection at the missiles because he shot them into the sea near Korea. They didn't at one time threaten anyone, the Aleutians. Not so much as a penguin was threatened anywhere in the Antarctic, and not one Hawaiian who was drinking kava kava illegally and getting ready to set off fireworks illegally, even though they detest the United States of America, even though they hate on the United States of America, even though they want to separate from the United States of America, they're getting ready to set off fireworks. They don't know why, because they like the colors. Even they were not threatened. That's why we chose not to do anything. The microcephalics in our media have won. The microcephalics have permitted whatever. What's the point of my talking about this? What do you care? Why do you care about any of this? Why should you care about it? Everything is good. Everything is coming up roses. Things couldn't be better. The schmucks in Hawaii don't care about missiles from Korea, because if they did, it would mean that Obama has failed them again. Let's see. I went on to the Honolulu Advertiser. Let's see what the head story is. Not about rockets from Korea. Here's the headline from the HonoluluAdvertiser.com. Thursday, July 2nd, 2009. Judge's ruling halts Lingle's plan to furlough state workers. In other words, the governor of Hawaii realizes that the state is broke, so she's going to furlough state workers to save money. So a communist judge says, no, you can't furlough state workers. We must keep the communist welfare state of Hawaii going. Okay? We must keep it going a little longer. Let's see what the next Hawaii State Senate president urges. Veto of Hawaii excise tax on online retailers likely to stand. Hawaii libraries brace for 20% cut in budget. May close branches. Well, I guess the pedophiles will have to go to a few libraries near themselves from now on to meet the children. They won't be able to get a library in their own neighborhood. Median Oahu home price slips to $569 in June. Oh, no kahoy. You lucky you live Hawaii. Oh, no kahoy. You lucky you live Hawaii. You live in the best place on earth. Oh, Hawaii, no kahoy. Now they want to separate from the mainland and create their own nation. Well, let me ask you something. If a state is a welfare state like Hawaii that lives off the tax base of the other 49 states, how are they going to make it as an independent nation run by local Hawaiians, managed by a demagogue from Ohio? Tell me how in the world they're going to earn income. Tell me how they're going to make a living. Let's see. They hate the military, so they'll kick the military out of Hawaii. That's the number one employer. Let us see. They hate tourism because that wrecks the ecology of the pot smokers. That's number two. How are they going to live? They're going to wind up eating each other again like cannibals. That's why I say you live in a crazy world. So you're lucky you have a man like me who knows everything. And what I don't know, you'll catch me on, or I'll admit. Let's go to another local website here, see what we can find. We did Drudge Report. Nothing new on there other than Michael Jackson's videotaped display. San Francisco Bay Area, you heard they're talking about a cooking class. Nothing about U.S. soldier captured in Iraq. Is it a boy or a girl, a man or a woman? Another time, the entire nation would be focused on getting a captured soldier back. Now they won't even tell us he's captured. They just say he's missing. Well, it could be the soldier's actually not missing. It could be that he went out to buy baskets from the Taliban. that he wanted to experience the multicultural wonders of Afghanistan. Or maybe he went out to score some dope. You never really know with today's military. Could be crossed the enemy lines to see if he could buy some good pot. And, of course, it's nowhere on the cable channels, the missing soldier, because it might stir up too much sympathy for the troops. And also, of course, it would show you that Obama's actually a bigger warmonger than Bush. Why? Now, why is Obama a bigger warmonger than Bush? Because it's good for the grease. How are contractors who put Obama in power going to get paid back? After all, Nancy Pelosi is gorging on your money. Bonnie Frank
is gorging on your money. Bonnie Frank says don't give back TARP money. Even though the contract says that when the money is earned back, the TARP money has to go back to the taxpayer. Bonnie Frank says, no, don't give it back to the taxpayer. I want to spend it on certain things. So because I'm chosen to do this. I mean, it's a day of war. This is awesome that I can do this. It's pretty awesome when you consider that I'm a schmuck who knows nothing. I got so far. And when you think about it, that I can go so far as to steal money from the taxpayers that are supposed to get back and nothing happens, it's pretty awesome. It shows you we're living in the days of war.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
Life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life.
It is the Savage Nation. Many, many very important. There are a lot of important stories. You don't care, though. The important thing is that you're going to feast on hot dogs and watch Michael Jackson over the weekend. You don't care about a U.S. soldier captured in Iraq or Bonnie Frank wanting to steal TARP money from taxpayers for pet projects for Acorn or North Korea firing 4 missiles and Obama does nothing. The U.S. Navy was told, once again, stand down, do nothing. You know, why should you know any of that? It'll only make you unhappy. And an unhappy citizen is an unproductive citizen. A happy citizen is a productive citizen. If you read 1984, you recognize that we're living in 1984 and beyond. Obama is the supremely perfect leader, and only happy citizens should be permitted in the new America under Chairman Obama. Well, first of all, you have to analyze that problems in society are only caused by unhappy people, and therefore unhappy people need to be rooted out by a just government. A just government seeks out unhappy individuals and tries at first in a nice way to convince them that the supreme ruler is their big daddy, and that the big daddy wants nothing but good for them. Now, if the citizen is still not happy, it means the citizen is either a criminal or mentally deranged. If the citizen who is unhappy, therefore, and refuses to acknowledge the all-perfect knowledge and goodness of the chairman, refuses to mend his ways, the state has only one or two choices. He can either have the citizen arrested as a criminal or have the citizen put into a mental hospital and given antipsychotic drugs, because that's what was done in the ex-Soviet Union, and that's how they maintained order. And now, of course, that led to the falling down of the wall because Reagan came along and he disturbed the social order of the ex-Soviet Union. Now, I mean, it was a perfectly happy state. The medical care was a disaster, but everyone had it. The important thing was not that the medical care was any good in the ex-Soviet Union. The important thing was that everyone had medical care, even though it was worthless. And that's what the perfect one is trying to do in America, is give you everyone should have medical care, but none of it should be of any value whatsoever. The doctor should not even be able to read a chart. The important thing is that you have someone comes in with a stethoscope who mumbles perhaps an Urdu and looks at a chart on the wall, and you feel better knowing that it's a doctor approved by the chosen one. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about or not, or am I talking to myself? San Francisco, Danny, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Savage, look, I just want to say real quick, I really look up to you. I always wanted to tell you that, talk to you, and I honestly lionize you, Mike. I could care less about Hollywood goons like Michael Jackson, who's been a nut job ever since Chinese food been greasy.
Danny, do you live in San Francisco, per se?
Very close. I live up the freeway in Rohnert Park, Sonoma County.
Well, the reason I say it is that you better be careful that the government doesn't arrest you for not being happy with Obama as your supreme leader. You might be a radical who's unhappy with him because you're mentally deranged or an enemy of the state. You got to understand that you live in a perfect state now. Everything is perfect. Barbara Boxer is perfect. Your own congresswoman is a genius. Isn't she a great woman, your local congresswoman?
Oh, yeah. I know they'd rather have tie-dye instead of camouflage on the tanks, but it ain't happening.
There you go. That's right. And flowers coming out of the barrel of a tank. And, of course, they would also like to remove the propellers from the U.S. naval ships and permanently moor them as floating birthing clinics for illegal immigrants.
And let's remove the World War II cemeteries and put strip clubs and those type of stuff.
You know, you have a very good point. That's a waste of space. All of those World War II veteran cemeteries, after all, their wives are dead. They've been gone a long time. They died 60, 70 years ago. I think perhaps they should be paved over and be turned into a, well, just something useful to the new state, the new world order.
Hey, Mike, my grandma passed away. You remind me very much of her. She grew up in the Depression times in San Francisco.
So she knew what was going on, in other words. She didn't grow up with rose-colored glasses dancing to Michael Jackson.
She taught me about World War II, about the Depression, about being frugal.
Frugal. You know, being frugal is unto itself being an enemy of the state, Danny, because you got to understand something. Frugality, while once a virtue, under the Obama administration, is actually a state crime. Because if you save money, really you're stealing it from Barney Frank. You shouldn't be saving money and putting it in banks. You should be putting it out there and buying things so he can steal it from you in terms of giving loans to other bankers like Goldman Sachs. Because then you'll be a good citizen. I would suspect anybody who has a bank account larger than $1,000 should be investigated by the FBI. Because I think that indicates unto itself a sort of antisocial attitude. Thanks, Danny. Appreciate it. I didn't intend to be sarcastic today, but I guess that's the way it works. British didn't consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. I don't believe a word of it. Why did it come out yesterday? Why did the British government acknowledge that they did not discuss me, but they have since discussed me? Answer, because it's a giant cover-up being conducted by the Obama administration. They told the stooges in Britain who are out of business anyway, you may as well say this. You think that Helen Thomas will cover this one day?
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere waiting for me. My lover stands.
Doing some emails during the break. Emailing back and forth to Helen Thomas. All right, here we are. Let's see, what was I talking about? Oh, yes. Even aging leftist Helen Thomas thinks Obama's control of the media is worse than Nixon's. She actually stood up to the spokesmouth for Obama, the schmuck Robert Gibbs, and he would try to sneer at her. Why does he sneer, or why does Obama sneer with that curled lip? You find Obama's attitude arrogant? With that face up in the air looking down at everybody with that curled lip, him and that Gibbs. One of these days, Alice, one of these days, U.S. soldier captured in Iraq, media ignores it. Barney Frank wants to take the TARP money that was supposed to be returned to the taxpayer and spend it by giving it on to Acorn and on housing projects. Isn't that amazing? North Korea fires 4 missiles. You didn't read about it. All you read about was Michael Jackson's hips. So, therefore, that's the whole story. Play Johnny, whatever his name is. What's his name? Bobby Darin?
It's
play it again. Don't play it. It blew it. It was a moment. It passed. If it wasn't exactly when I thought of it, it's no good. I thought of it and it ended. I'm going away tomorrow. I'm also going to go away like a lemming, like everyone else. It's July 4th. I got to be away. I figure if the people in the media, everyone's gone somewhere, I should go somewhere, too. Although when I get there, I don't know why I got there. I have no idea why I went there. The pillow's no good. The bed's no good. The house is no good. The food is no good. The air is no good. The temperature's no good. The neighbors are worse than the neighbors I left behind. I mean, this is unbelievable. There's no point in traveling. But I'll go anyway. Why? Because it's July 4th and I'm supposed to go somewhere. So I'm going to go somewhere to Area 50. What area am I going to? Area 54? What's the one in the desert that they have? Area 52? That's 51, Area 51, the secret area. My other studio out of the Bay Area is Area 52. Oh, Area 53 is in a secret location across America, another part of the nation. I'm going to be moving around, and or I may not go anywhere. See, that way, if you have many studios, not only do you not know where you're going to be at any one time, but your wonderful stalkers won't know where you're going to be at any one time. That's all. I got an itch job last night in a Chinese restaurant. Okay, I know it's becoming like a gag line already. After spending about 10 minutes talking about how bad food is becoming in Asian restaurants, are they cheating me? And you confirmed even in Kansas they're doing it? I go to a place, she knows me. I didn't want to go over the bridge where the sauce is very good, a Hunan place, Hakka cuisine, which I love the green sauce. It's kept me alive all these years. That it's a chili sauce that's astounding. I don't know how they make it. I really should bottle that stuff. It's so good. I didn't want to go over the bridge. So I went to a place in Marin. How you doing? And they look you in the eye. I don't get it. Like your best friend. And you say, no sugar, no this, no spice. I took one bite of one dish, my scalp, and to my toes and my scalp were itching till 5 in the morning. Like I had St. Vitus dance in bed. I don't understand it. Then the house I'm staying in up used to be a quiet block. And some white trash moved in up the street with some teenagers with loud cars. And they have idiot white liberal friends. All they do all night is drive up and down the street. Up and down till 3 in the morning. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, if they're smoking dope, you would think it would sedate them. Every 20 minutes, the car up and down, down and up, broken mufflers, like a golf cart car one of them has, some schmuck. And I keep saying to myself, why is there no war? Why can't they go off to war? Why is there no Flanders Field, I say to myself? Why? Why do they have so much free time on their hands, I say to myself? This is what goes on in my head in the middle of the night. What can I tell you? And you want me to talk about Goldman Sachs? I did it for an hour yesterday. What did I get for it? I made more enemies. I made more enemies of some of the most powerful, wealthy people in the world who, as you know, put the stooge in as president. You think that the president is actually elected by you? You're crazy. The 1918 World Series were fixed by Arnold Rothstein, whatever his name was. So you're telling me that this last election was an honest election? I think the election in Iran was more honest than the election we had here, with thugs with clubs outside voting booths, and with Acorn voting 43 times, and with illegal aliens voting with no citizenship for a man who many people say has no citizenship. Well, excuse me, not American citizenship. That's a big thing. I'm not involved in it, so I don't want to take credit for it. Many of you don't call on that. That's almost like saying UFOs now or abortion. Please. I did not say the word citizenship. Don't. If you're a birther, don't call me. Others are doing a very good job. No, I don't want to know about it. No, the lights went just almost crazy. It went like a pinball machine on tilt. The red lights went crazy. All I got to do is say certain words. Obama's birth. Oh, there it is. Obama's, where was he born? That's it. There it goes. Well, Mike, glad you're aboard now. Yeah, really. Glad you're aboard now. We know that. How about abortion? Yeah. There goes again. Or there are a couple other ones you can do. Gun. All I have to do is say gun. There used to be a guy, a talk show, very nice man, but he had a flaw, a fluke. Does he do shows anymore? Because I don't want to insult him. I'm not going to mention his name. But he was known in the industry that he was a very nice, stable guy. But if a caller said anything to do with airplane, fin, aileron, propeller, that was it. He was off and running for 3 hours. About airplanes and the Air Force. In other words, it was like Manchurian Candidate with the card was thrown. You know what I'm saying? So if I say birth, that's it. That's the end of the show. Birther, Indonesia, magic words. Plunk your magic plunker, Froggy. Oh, God. I'm going to go into the heat and the humidity like a moron. I'm the best weather in the world right now. 65 degrees, cool, foggy. Where am I going on vacation? In the heat where you could die. A frog wants to get out of there this time of year. I don't know why I'm going. I have no idea why I'm going there. Well, because I'm not alone in the world. You can't just make arbitrary decisions. The water's 85 degrees in the Miami area right now. So many people who are semi-psychotic go to Florida in the summer. They say in order to go in the water. I have no idea why they want to go in the water when it's hot. All right, but they go in the water. You want to go in hot water, you go in a bathtub. But they say it's therapeutic, go in. It's warmer than the Caribbean right now because of the Gulf Stream and of global warming. Yeah, right. It got warmer. The same temperature for the last 100 years. On a mean average every month is more or less the same since they've been keeping temperatures. Don't tell that to Al Gore. But I have found a while ago that if you go into the ocean, the ocean's a very dangerous place to swim in, by the way. People don't know that until the early part of the 1890s, nobody went in the ocean unless they were thrown off a fishing boat. People basically did not swim in the ocean. It was known as a dangerous place. Crabs, squid, jellyfish, sharks, no one went in. Unless they fell out of a canoe while they were chasing an ahi or a mahi. Nobody really wanted to go into the ocean. Then all of a sudden they started going in with those ugly bathing suits, which I really would hope come back, because I'm sick and tired of looking at everybody's body parts. I'd rather see ugly bathing suits with stripes. I don't know. What an undignified thing to wear what they wear today. But, I mean, even when I was young, I didn't wear those things that they wear as a guy. What are those? What kind of guy wears those Speedo things? They're all sick in the head. Any guy, I knew guys when I was a young man who wore Speedos, all crazy. Particularly the older guys. Their hair was a little longer. They wore a Speedo. Watch out. I remember when I was working at Shanks Paramount Hotel as a bus. I didn't mean to slip into this. All right, I slipped and slid into it. It's summertime. Give me a break. I was a busboy a couple of summers up in a mountainous area north of New York City by approximately 100 miles, known as the Catskill Mountains. They used to call it other things. They used to call it the Jewish Alps, then they call it the Italian Alps, because right across the hill were the Poconos. Those are the Italian Alps, the Poconos. Then in the Monticello area, they called it the Jewish Alps. The mountains were very low, but they were very pretty. And they built horrible, gaudy, disgusting hotels that were demented, what they built. But they started as cottages. But it was a lot of fun. So I worked as a busboy up there. And you cannot believe what you learn in a place like that over a period of a summer. I worked my way through college, so to speak. And many people sent themselves through college, law school, medical school, every summer. And you met people who were great and people who were real Madoffs. Let me put it that way. And the rest were just average in between hardworking schmoes who went away for 2 weeks a year and, you know, suffered and died. And there's a tombstone somewhere that no one goes to. That's it. That's life. That's for most of us. But then on the extremes, you had Madoffs on one side and saints on the other. And if you were an open-minded kid, you can learn from people. So at some point when I'm in the mood, I'll tell you about some of those stories. I think some of them I wrote about in Psychological Nudity, like Fat Al's Tuna, where he made the tuna with his arm in a tureen. That's a classic by now. That's a Catskill Mountain story. But there are other stories. I have not yet told you, for example. I know how I got distracted with the Speedos and the guys with slightly long hair. Now, I didn't say very long hair. Very long hair is another story. I'm talking slightly long, which meant seedy. Any man who has slight, you know, see, there's a lot of men over 60 who think they look debonair, but they actually look like Bowery bums. This is a late, they're trying to hide the baldness, the pattern baldness in the front. So they grow it long in the back. That's like a Madoff thing. They think it looks debonair somehow. They look like a stew bum, basically, who didn't get his hair cut. Looks like he's got to go for the 25-cent Salvation Army haircut. But he thinks he's debonair, looks in the mirror. Well, he's looking at the back of his head. He don't look at the front anymore. He can't stand what he sees. So now he looks at the back. Guys like that who wear Speedos, you know there's something wrong in the head. You know that. Nobody I know ever wore a Speedo, except one person in Shanks Paramount Hotel wore a pair of Speedos. And as I said, his hair was slightly seedy. Now, if I tell you who this person is and what he became years from now, you'll not believe it. And so I won't tell it to you because there's no point and I'll get sued. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Let's take your calls. Thomas in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing? I'm going to spend the weekend being a subversive American, but teach my kids more respect for the flag, more respect for the country, more respect for their adults, and to shun liberalism at every single turn.
Thomas, you see, unto itself, you are a suspect citizen of the new Obama state. Anyone who waves a flag on July 4th and reminds their children that it is about independence from Britain is unto himself a suspect citizen of the Janet Napolitano. You may wind up on a Homeland Security watch list for doing so.
We should never, ever forget that.
No, you should never forget that Janet Napolitano may put you on a watch list for waving an American flag on July 4th.
I swear to God, I hope nobody ever comes to my house asking me about that because...
No, let's stop right there. Wait till the acorn workers arrive with clubs in their hand. Wait till Obama's goon squad arrives with truncheons and asks you about how many people are in your household. And you say no. Let's see if they pull you away and say you're violating the law.
Yeah. I can't wait for the census takers to show.
Yeah, that should be fun. They're going to be the highest rung of society, the census takers. You think they'll speak English?
I doubt it.
I doubt that the census takers will speak any English, unless it's English as a first, as a second language, or not as a first language. That's all. All right, we said what we had to say. Play music for me now. It's a quarter to already. Almost a whole hour knocked off.
That's
already.
Life.
Who's this?
Hey. That's what all the people say.
No, I'm not in the mood. This is a little too thoughtful. Let's play Dean Martin with, not Valare. Give me any other Dean Martin other than Valare. No Valare, please. There is a restaurant in this town that I'm going to where a guy sings on a, what do they call those, Moog synthesizers? No, that's from the 70s. What do they call it where he sings in? A karaoke machine. Now, the food is quite good. It's an Italian restaurant. I made the mistake of the last time I went down there of eating in this place. I couldn't believe it. He sings on a karaoke machine, a big Italian guy with a 20-inch neck with tattoos. He's about 60 years old. I don't know how he wound up in this restaurant. Turn this off. They can't hear me and listen. I go in there. The food was very good, but this guy did not stop singing on the karaoke machine. Every Italian favorite known to the lower masses, this guy knew. It was plugged into the machine. And the women, the middle-aged women with too much perfume at other tables, apparently they were swooning over this guy. He must be the owner or the owner's brother-in-law, whatever. He did not stop for 2 hours. You could not digest a clam. You couldn't drink clam juice without gagging on it from the loudness. The loudness wasn't bad enough karaoke while you're eating. I have no idea whether. But on top of it all, at a volume that would make Michael Jackson's legs jump in a grave. You know what I'm saying? So I can't go back there. So I'm stuck. I am stuck. There's not one good Chinese joint in the entire state of Florida. Not one. You don't know what you're eating, what kind of meat it is. You know, it's white meat. It could be alligator. You don't know what you're eating down there. Opossum. How do you know what you're eating in Florida? When they say Chinese and it's chicken, you don't know what you're getting in Florida. No such thing as Chinese food in Florida. Let's start with that. You want Chinese food, San Francisco. I know where to go. Yeah, I know where to go. I used to know where to go, but lately you can't get Chinese food in Florida. Forget about it. It doesn't exist. There is good Italian food in Florida because there's a lot of Italian Americans from New Jersey who understand food, who live down there, and they wouldn't take crap from the owner like they do in California, where they're afraid of everybody. The only people they're not afraid of here are patriots. Everyone else they're afraid of. Whatever they give them, they don't even know what they're eating, but they're sophisticated because they swirl the wine. Whenever you see two people swirling wine, you know that they're swine. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Little girl of mine.
Major League stories, but not covered by the Obama press. I was going to play for you what went on at the press conference. That even Chip Reed, that could you imagine a man as liberal as Chip Reed, even he had finally found the guts to stand up to that sneering jerk, whatever his name is, who works for Obama. And then Helen Thomas, the old crony, even she was amazed, where she said that even Nixon didn't dare do this. Where's the one with just the piece with her saying Nixon? We have that one? Oh, that was a written thing. You're right. Now, you got to listen to this. I want you to listen to clip 7, what went on. Listen to this.
I'm amazed at you people who call for openness and transparency. And
you haven't even heard the questions.
It doesn't matter. It's the process.
You hear that jerk Gibbs giggling? You hear this is a press secretary giggling. That giggle was not a schoolgirl. That was the press secretary for the most powerful man in the world giggling when two reporters from the stooge press finally say a word to him, such as, where's the openness and transparency? What, you know, there's a part of this that's jealousy, I understand. What they're pissed off at is that unknown nobodies from websites are being picked instead of them. I get it. Of course there's a little jealousy there. I can get that. But they're also aware of the fact that there's people like you out there who are emailing them saying, we don't believe a word you say anymore. Stop being a lapdog. And I think that it's all working. Carl Springs, Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage. You're absolutely right about the Chinese food. It's so hard to find a good Chinese dish down here. And coming from New York, I'd like to have one, but it's like...
You can't. Impossible. I almost got poisoned twice down there when I was there last time. And hostile. I don't know where this group comes from, but these are hard guys. They look like they smuggled over on a freighter. You say one word about the food, it looks like he's going to bring out a cleaver from the back.
Yeah, well, they got caught, these ducks that are down here that come from South America. They're called Muscovies, and a couple of guys got caught using them in their food. So, but Mr. Savage...
What, muskrats?
No, they're called Muscovy. They're ducks. They're a breed of duck, a species.
Oh. Are they wild?
Well, they're domesticated, but they're, you know, they're out everywhere in South Florida, so...
Oh, so they're like the geese in California, like the Canadian geese, and they got to kill them?
You just throw a little bread on the floor, and it's so easy to catch them. A lot of the Mexicans...
Oh, so they're selling them as Peking duck when they're really South American Muscovy?
It's amazing. No, they'll say Peking duck. Yeah, it's amazing down here.
Yeah, Peking duck. Yeah. What do you want? You want Peking duck? Yeah, we got it. All right.
Yeah, when the Haitians started moving into this one neighborhood, the population of Muscovy ducks went down far where you couldn't even find them in that neighborhood.
Well, maybe we should move the Haitians to the Bay Area because the Canadian geese are out of control.
Savage, let me just tell you, you are like a visionary. You might be the modern day of our time, John the Baptist, the voice in the wilderness, because I've heard you apply God's knowledge to your knowledge, and the amazing thing about yourself is that how you take past events and current events, political science, social events, history, etc., and you can actually tell the future in a way of what's going to happen just from your experience. And
oh boy, can I ever! You don't have to look any further than the past experience of citizens in the Soviet Union or China under Mao Zedong to see what might happen here, unless the press and the people stand up to this gangster regime that we have running the country. And I say those words pointedly. You think I'm looking for more trouble than I already have? It's as though America's been taken over by a gang, not by a political party. That's how I see it. It's as though a gang has taken over the country, not a political party. And even the press is starting to stand up to them. That's what I'm trying to get at. Even the supine press is starting to speak out against the gang that can shoot very straight indeed.
Mr. Savage, you can't overcome that feeling.
North Korea, nothing. They say nothing. China, nothing. But citizens who stand up to them, wait till you see how well they can handle it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I thought it was rock and roll. Sounds like a professional mourner.
Are you?
What's up? What's up? What's up, Bonnie Frank? Even Helen Thomas, the 89-year-old crone who hates conservatives, military, police, and America, was pissed off at the spokesmouth for Obama. Listen to clip 7. She stood up to him. You know, you got to give her credit.
I'm amazed at you people who call for openness and transparency.
Helen, you haven't even heard the questions.
It doesn't matter. It's the process.
You hear the giggling?
Even if there's a tough question, it's a question coming from somebody who was invited or who has screened.
All right, so these are the supine members of the midstream media, shocked, finally, at the behavior of Obama and his spokesmouth Gibbs in pre-picking people, pre-picking questions, and Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. You know, Obama commenting not on North Korea, not commenting on Bonnie Frank wanting not to return top money from taxpayers as the law requires, but changing the law so we can steal the money and redirect it towards housing projects that Acorn can benefit from. And Obama not speaking about North Korea. Instead, Obama in clip 10, listen to clip 10, you're not going to believe it. This is Obama.
Michael Jackson is will go down in history as one of our greatest entertainers. I grew up on his music.
Oh!
All his stuff on my iPod.
That's all. Now we understand. Now we got it. Now finally, the picture's starting to become complete. Not Chopin, not Beethoven, not even Mantovani. He grew up on Michael Jackson. So now, in other words, you got what you paid for here. That's all. Speaks well. Speaks well, got a nice voice, dresses well, looks good. But his music favorite is Michael Jackson, not Ludwig von Beethoven. It gets worse in clip 11.
You know, I think that his brilliance as a performer also was paired with a tragic and...
All right, turn it off. I can't listen to this guy anymore. I really wish to God Bush would come back. Bush's dyslexia, by comparison, is more literate than this man's false literacy in the sense that what Obama says, although it's spoken well, is more gibberish than Bush's mangled sentences. Does that say it? Does that say it clearly enough? Bush mangled the English language like no one in history in the presidency, right? But compared to what Obama says and what he talks about and how he says nothing when the teleprompter's not running, I'll take Bush.
The United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
The man who killed the American avocado industry. I don't even like avocado anymore. I lived on them for years. I ate avocado, tomato every morning on a bagel for year in and year out. Then years later, I read that, and I didn't know this. I intuitively knew it. There must be an Aztec gene or something, Inca, little Incan blood. I lived on avocado smeared on a bagel with tomato. I knew about lycopene 15 years ago. I wrote about it. But you combine the tomato with the avocado, and you magnify the health benefits of either fruit. It was discovered years later. But since the avocados are no longer raised in California, but they're raised south of the border, down Mexico way, and since, as you well know, they fertilize their crops in Mexico with a certain byproduct of the human body, and the pesticide use in Mexico is on the level of any other third world nation, which means it's toxic, I don't eat avocado. I don't enjoy avocado anymore. I only eat organic vegetables and fruit from California. It's one of the things you can still get out here. Thank God there are still organic farmers. God bless them. I love paying a little extra. I mean, reached a point in America you couldn't eat a piece of lettuce. It was like eating a sandal. Every bite of lettuce was like eating a toxic sandal lately for 10 years. I get an organic lettuce, a different story. Still throw away the outer leaves more so that you can feed a pack of hamsters with what I throw away. You could keep a family of hamsters alive for 100 years with what I still throw away with an organic lettuce. I don't care what they say, organic. Yeah, right, I really believe them. Yeah, they put a stamp on it, but I can taste organic because it doesn't have the pesticide smell. And how do you tell if an onion, for example, or a piece of garlic is organic? A, they look shriveled up and horrendous. I've grown them. I just grew a bunch of garlic. The gardeners picked them for me. Shriveled up. They look like Adolf Hitler's one good testicle. That's how small they are. But the fact of the matter is they are shriveled compared to the commercial. Beowulf, did you touch that word? Because you shouldn't have, because I'm going to say it again. If you did, I'm saying it again. Because I'm going to listen in a minute. I grew garlic. I planted it last winter. So finally they were harvested in my little side yard like 2 weeks ago. Then we dried them in the sun. They do look different than commercial garlic in that, as I say, the size of them is equal to Hitler's one good testicle. Very small, very shriveled up. The taste is good, though. Very pungent, very sulfury. Now, how you can tell if a commercial garlic really is organic, even has a label, okay, that's a lie because they smear off the Obama health inspector. But the way you tell is that if the sprout comes out from it while it sits in your kitchen, let's say you don't get to it, and it should sprout, it means it wasn't sprayed with maleic hydrazide. Or same with your onion. You love to see an onion sprout once in a while. That's a healthy sign that it wasn't sprayed and cauterized, in essence. So I love to eat sprouts, onion sprouts, garlic sprouts. Why am I telling you this? Because it's very interesting. It's important. Little things gleaned from everyday life. I know the big and the little. If I tell you Bonnie Frank wants to steal TARP money, you can take that to the bank. Well, excuse me, not to the bank, but you can take that to the mental bank. If I tell you North Korea fired four missiles and our president talks about Michael Jackson because he's a complete and total front man for Goldman Sachs and other moneyed interests, you can take that to the bank. You get it? All right, what's the difference? Let's go to Ed in Phoenix, Arizona. Go ahead, Ed, what's on your mind?
Mike, it's such a pleasure to talk to you from your
It should be, because you go crazy with the world as it is out there without me.
You got me going, buddy. You got me going. And I wanted just a comment, a small comment on yesterday. You said that these guys in Washington, this Beltway crowd, has got criminal minds. And you always said to yourself, wow, I wish I was smart as these guys. I wish I was smart as them and this and that. But they were not smart. The criminal mind, you touched on some. The criminal mind is not smart. They are clever, very clever, but they're not smart. I did a lot of work with child molesters and the like, the dredges of society. I'm a paralegal. And let me tell you, Mike, there is a distinction. You made that distinction yesterday, and it just ragged on my mind, because there's a difference between being very clever and being smart. These guys aren't smart. And now they're gay.
All right, so let's take a guy like Robert Rubin, who hired a PR agency to present them as a nice guy, a fly fisherman. It was all hogwash. But meanwhile, he was raping the country, according to the article in Rolling Stone, by rewriting laws to benefit himself and his friends on Wall Street. So where's the clever and where's the smart in that?
Right, and the cleverness and the rape is going on exponentially as more and more of these criminal minds come into power.
Okay, well, wait a minute. So wait a minute now, but they're getting away with it. How do we stop them?
That's the thing, Mike, is that the country has blinders on. My own family, my own children, I talk to them, they're like, oh, well, they don't know what to say.
They think you're out of touch and old. They're for everything that you don't believe in. They think it's wonderful. They think Obama's great. They have no idea what a phony the guy is and how dangerous he is for their own future and their freedom. They don't know. They don't understand it.
But they're good people. They got good hearts. They thought they
That's correct. That is right. But wait a minute. That goes back to our discussion of clever and smart. The clever people know how to manipulate the good people, the naive people, like your children. They manipulate liberals, most of whom are actually decent people who want to get along with everybody and want to do the right thing. They don't even understand what's going on around them.
That was shrug books for Christmas. I didn't know what to do.
I don't know what to do. If Bonnie Frank is able to steal TARP money from taxpayers when he's required by law to spend TARP profits, to send TARP profits back to the Treasury before they can be spent, and he's going to go around that law already, why is he not taken away in handcuffs?
I got to say this. I sent my smarter relatives maximum immunity.
I wouldn't. Oh, I see. You want to keep them alive, huh?
Hey, Ed,
let me ask you. You live in Phoenix, Arizona. I see that according to the Telos prompter. Is Phoenix today still a very popular destination amongst folks who are witness protection?
Yeah. That's a little sad.
Well, why? Why do they like Phoenix? Why is Phoenix such a destination for witness protection people? Why? What's there?
Here's the thing, Mike. You saw The Perfect Storm. I used to know those guys. I fished with those guys. I walked over their boat. I drank with them at the Crow's Nest in the same place. I'm a commercial fisherman. I used to be a captain.
Oh, so you went out on the one-way Sicilian boat rides, the one-way rides.
Yeah, the Sicilian. Yeah, two and a half. That's
all right, so what happened?
Well, I got into a car accident and I got paralyzed, and I ended up. My aunt lives out here, and she says, you know, this is the place everybody goes to heal.
Wait. Now you got me confused. Where were you when you had the accident? What city?
Oh, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Yeah.
You're originally from Ted Kennedy's backyard.
In New Bedford. Yeah.
Oh, you're in an old whaler. You were originally from an old whaling town.
I used to work security in 1978, and I got a story about Bonnie Frank, too.
I don't want to hear it. Really, this is a family show, Ed. We can't go there. you know we're in the end of times when a man of that low caliber has such power over the financial reins of America.
I know it.
Let me ask you something. One last question in your impression, because you're a realist. Let us say that Bonnie Frank was put in jail for what he's been doing, found guilty in jail, and he comes out after 2 years, and he's stripped of his pension. He has to make a living. What job would Bonnie Frank be qualified for, given that he's never worked for a living in his life? He's always been a politician. What could he actually do?
I see him slobbering as a shoe salesman, putting shoes, fitting shoes on fat ladies.
Oh, you're bad. Because the minute you say shoe salesman, we all get an image of a guy on his kneeling down in a shoe store looking upwards, correct?
Yeah, that's it. And being disgusted at the women.
No, we can't go there. We're not in the bar right now, Ed.
All right. Okay.
So wait a minute. You got my attention here. It's a relaxed show today. Ed, you got in an accident. You used to drink with these guys in Massachusetts?
That's right. In Gloucester, that's where we docked. We docked in Gloucester.
But I was asking you. You came out to Phoenix, and Phoenix is a big one-way destination for people who are hiding. It used to be, but why would anyone want to go to Phoenix? I'm trying to figure out.
Right. It's like the death knell, right? Okay, thanks for that, Mike. No.
I mean, I didn't mean exactly that way. Although I'm implying it. It's hot. You got desert. There's no water there. What's there for a person?
You know something, Mike, you got to look at it.
Let me break it down for you. My mother, may she rest in peace. I told the story 100 times on the show. In her last years, no matter what I would say to her, I wrote a book, I had another child, whatever, she'd say, that's nice, the Chinese food was no good last night. She was always giving me a... So at the end, I used to get really pissed at her till I realized there was wisdom in it. At the end of your life, all you care about is whether the Chinese or Italian is any good. Which brings me back to Phoenix. Can you get a decent Italian meal in Phoenix?
I remember the conversations with your mother, Mike. I remember.
Oh, God bless. No, but really, can you get it? Chinese you can't get in Phoenix.
You can't get nothing. You can't get nothing.
Florida. You got Arby's? You got Arby's? You got IHOP?
You were talking about Florida. And Florida is the absolute worst, if you ask me.
Oh, my God. It's a swamp. Yeah, but in Arizona, if you ask for, like, chicken charmaine, you know you're getting rattlesnake charmaine.
No, steak, Mike, here, steak. Beef.
That's what you can get beef? Where's it come from?
You can get a good steak here. That's
You
that,
can?
That's an axiom.
Thank God. Yeah, Arizona. What was that state called? I used to read Arizona Highways when I was living in New York and dream of going there. I ran out of time, my friend. Have a good day. I'll be back. Savage. Is everybody off in the media? No one's on. I think they're all away somewhere. Where do they all go? Is there some place that all talk shows go to that I'm missing? Where they all go to some Clavin somewhere or convention or whatever? Martha's Vineyard with all of the politicians they claim they bash. If we find out that a certain somebody who likes to, let's say, travel in political circles was at Martha's Vineyard, you'll know already it's over. The puppeteers have gotten everybody. British didn't consult U.S. on Michael Savage exclusion. This looks like a cover-up to Michael Savage. So I just want to give you an update. If you supported the Savage Legal Fund, which many of you have done, I got a letter from my lawyers today, and let's see, what can I tell you that you should know? What should I say? I don't think carefully sometimes. This is the difference between clever and smart. I'm not clever or smart when it comes to certain things. I'll be honest with you. I'm a little too open in some ways. And, I can tell you this much, that I can't tell you anything. That much I can tell you. That I just figured out. Whew, caught that one. On the right side of MichaelSavage.com is a real good, but even far-left lunatic reporter says Obama controlling press more than Richard Nixon. You got to read it. Let's go to a quick call. Mike in Florida, I have a minute. Go ahead, please.
Very high privilege and an honor to talk to you, sir. First of all, Mr. Mike, when I first listened to you, which was like a month ago, I couldn't stand you. I'm like, man, this guy's like rabid. But I listened to you, and I said, man, he's making sense, and now I feel like you're my family. First of all, I'm from where you're from.
Mike, wait a minute. Mike, hold on. What do you mean by rabid? You mean I'm emotional and I actually believe what I say?
I didn't mean it in a bad way. No.
No, I understand. I don't take it negatively. I mean, as long as you don't say I have rabies, I take it. But rabid usually means someone who's a mad dog in that sense. But what you really mean is I'm passionate.
Very passionate, and I didn't understand that when I first heard you. But then
right, because you're used to a quiet, laconic voice. That's how the politicians gull the snake.
Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
So we have a brilliant rhetorician for puppeteer-in-chief saying nothing about Korea firing rockets, about U.S. soldier capture in Iraq. Instead, he comments on Michael Jackson, and we know finally what we got. And we got a president who grew up not on the classics, but on Michael Jackson. Now you understand the whole story. You don't need to know anymore. There's some good stories on michaelsavage.com that maybe you'll get to. Many of you don't go to the internet for your news. You listen to radio, and that's fine, whatever. This is the primary thing. It's July 4th weekend. They got the fireworks. No one knows what they're for. No one knows what they celebrate. No one knows what they symbolize. But the important thing is that you go and you get the fireworks, the hot dog, the dyspepsia, whatever. But whatever you do, don't teach your children that it's Independence Day, and it means independence from the evil UK. Don't teach them it's independence from the oppressive, authoritarian British government that July 4th celebrates. No. Now you say, well, I got an axe to grind with the UK. You're darn right I do. Oh, yeah, I got an axe to grind. Many of you would cancel summer trips to England. One listener canceled a $10 million worth of goods that he was going to buy for his factory from the UK. And I'm not suggesting you do or you don't do that, because one day my name will be taken off that list and they will apologize to me because I didn't belong on the list with murderers. But till that day comes, you make your own decision. That's all. I can't believe that even the aging leftists like Helen Thomas, who harangued Bush, poor Bush, for 8 years, attacked President Obama's spokesmouth, Gibbs, and said that even Nixon didn't try to do what you're trying to do to us. It's amazing that you're only answering carefully screened questions. You have fake town hall meetings. We have that whole sound thing. Do we worth play any of that? Yeah, just play at the beginning, clip one, start it.
It feels, I mean, the concept of a town hall, I think, is to have an open public forum. And this sounds like a very tightly controlled audience and list of questions. Why do it that way?
How about we do this? How about you can ask me that question tomorrow based on what questions were asked rather than pre-selecting your question based on something that may or may not come through.
Why pre-select? Why not just open it up to people and allow any question to come in?
Well, Chip, I think if you get on your computer from your email address, have you sent in your question?
I think that would be inappropriate. This is for the public.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm confused. Are you not a member of the public?
Well, I think if you were going to allow questions from the press, you'd have us in a prominent position over there and allow us to ask questions. You haven't done that.
Let's not get into the notion of where you'd be sitting if we asked you.
If you're arrogant, the schmuck is. But,
well out of shouting range.
Well, but you could email.
Would you put my question in there? Well, I don't think so.
Maybe. Have you emailed?
I mean, this is a town hall.
If you have an email.
This is an open forum for the public to ask questions, but it's not really open. But it's not open.
Based on what?
Based on the information that your staff gave us on how the audience and the questions are being selected.
The questions are being selected by people that email on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, they're not deciding what questions actually get in.
Chip, I appreciate, again,
tightly controlled.
I appreciate, again,
unlike his town meetings all through the campaign.
I appreciate the pre-selected question on your part.
Well, the dissenting views.
Yes. How about that?
I think that's a very safe bet. But again, let's... how about we do this? I promise we will interrupt the AP's tradition of asking the first question. I'll let you ask me a question tomorrow as to whether you thought the questions at the town hall meeting that the president conducted at Annandale.
That's not his point. The point is the control.
Exactly.
We have never had that in the White House.
I was going to say, I'll let you amend her question.
I'm amazed at you people who call for openness and transparency.
Haven't even heard the questions.
It doesn't matter. It's the process. Even if there's a tough question, it's a question coming from somebody who was invited or who has screened. Or the question was screened.
Chip, let's have this discussion at the conclusion of the town hall meeting. Okay. How about that?
Right.
Good for you, Helen. Go, girl.
You object to it at the town hall meeting, Helen.
It isn't the question.
What's a pattern?
It's a pattern of controlling the press.
How so? Is there any evidence currently going on that I'm controlling the press?
No.
Poorly, I might add.
Your formal engagements are prepackaged.
How so?
Well, and controlling
the
public.
How so? Like calling reporters the night before to tell them they're going to be called up? That is shocking.
We've had this discussion ad nauseum, and
of course you would, because you don't have any answers.
Because I didn't know you were going to ask a question, Helen. Go ahead.
Well, you should wait to see it.
Thank you for your support.
I'm going to wait for Helen.
That's good. Have you emailed your question today?
I don't have.
Can you imagine this low life? This low life. Hey, hold it a minute. Do you have any idea what you just listened to? You've listened to a revolution occurring in the White House press office, where a guy as measured and as controlled and as mainstream as Chip Reed is finally standing up to that snickering snot nose, way out of his league, this jerk Gibbs. I don't know where they got him from, but he's way out of control. He should be fired. And then, to top it off, Helen Thomas, who's, you know, a far-left, you know, radical type, but even she has had enough of this snot nose, and she takes him on. There's a revolution going on inside in the White House press corps right now. They see it finally. And I wanted you folks who've tuned into the Savage Nation today to see that there is hope, because, frankly, the so-called press that we have is supposed to be a watchdog for the people, not a lapdog for the government. And unfortunately, as you well know, they became the latter rather than the former. And the only watchdogs left are Michael Savage and a few others in the electronic media, some in the print media as well, few and far between. But when you have a press that's no longer a watchdog for the people, what you have is a dictatorship. And Helen Thomas sees that. She said, is this guy, you know. So that's what we're talking about, truthfully. Arizona Frank, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Mike, as a longtime listener, as the first time I finally got through without getting a busy signal, listen, my heart's pumping because you are the light of everybody's tunnel in this whole United States. You pick everything up, all of my brain that gets up into the atmosphere, and you pull it all down for me every day.
You make
the common sense out of everything. And
thank
finally,
you. And that's very nice, and it's heartfelt. I hear it. I'm not being cynical about it, but you know, it's a tough job every day when you think about it, Frank, because the media has gone to sleep. They're like in narcolepsy.
Oh yeah. And when I say you pull it all in, I mean, you really do. I had the whole last year, I had put barbed wire around my radio, so when the Associated Prussians have their little news blips between your show, I don't turn it off, you know? It gets me so frustrated, you know? It's just like...
Associated Prussians, that's a clever one. I like it. That's not a bad one. Hey, Frank, how do you take Arizona?
How do I like it?
Yeah, how do you handle it?
It's you know, it's got its times where you just got to sit back and do nothing all day, you know. But it's dry. It's a lot better than New York. I was in New York when the towers went down. I had to move out where I could just get clear and get away from all the little beady liberal eyes looking at you.
I hope you have a good time out there in that fantasy land. Thanks for calling. Here's a new story to get your weekend going. And if you're faint of heart, I suggest you hold on to something very hard. Senate bill fines people refusing health coverage. That's right, my friends. Americans who refuse to buy affordable Americans who refuse to buy affordable medical coverage under Obama's fascist plan could be hit with fines of more than $1,000 under a health care overhaul bill unveiled Thursday by key Senate fascist Democrats looking to fulfill Chairman Mao Tse-Tung Obama's top domestic policy. Americans, if you refuse to buy a medical coverage plan under Chairman Obama's universal coverage program in order to make certain that illegal aliens are covered and all of their relatives and every other crank in America, you could be fined $1,000. Now, it gets higher. That's on an individual. If you are a family and you refuse to be covered by the government fascist health plan, you're going to pay much higher penalties than individuals. That's what your Senate just did to you. That's what's going on in the country right now. In a statement, Chairman Obama welcomed the legislation, saying, quote, "It reflects many of the principles I've laid out." Well, I'm sure it does, which is that you can control Americans from the cradle to the grave. You can control their medication. But more importantly, you and your sneaks can look into anyone's medical history with the press of a button, and you could see how to manipulate them. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Judy, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Well, I want to thank you for all the wisdom you give us.
You're welcome.
Hello?
Yeah, you're welcome. And what else?
Oh, well, the recipe, the cashew tomato chow mein. Now, that's a great Chinese recipe.
Where'd you find the recipe?
In your book, Healing Children Naturally.
And really, it does have good recipes. They're all well done and well thought out. And they were done, you know, for people who want to actually prepare food for the children that is good and healthful and not going to give them hyperactivity reactions and not going to stimulate their ADD, so-called. Yeah, these recipes are quite good. I appreciate that. I do. Who do we have now on the Savage Nation? Cesare, New York, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call, and happy early 4th of July to you. It is incredible to see Gibbs become so nervous, anxious, that nervous laughter of his.
He sounded like a schoolgirl who was asked to dance by the captain of the football team.
It's like the kid in the back of the classroom that doesn't know the answer. That's what it sounded like. And like when he's
have you ever heard a press secretary giggle like a schoolgirl in your life?
No, I can't say that I have.
No, there's not a history of it, of any spokesmouth for a president ever giggling like that. Never. It's never happened before.
And I hope
that's why I played it, because I couldn't believe what I was listening to. It's as though it's a movie made about the meltdown of a nation.
You're absolutely right about bad Chinese food. There's none of it anywhere. I had the worst meal in my entire...
Wait. Now you're shifting gears. I mean, you're faster than I am. Where? What city?
I live in Providence, Rhode Island.
Don't tell me you can't get Italian food in Providence.
Actually, there was probably only one place that I would ever go do. Actually, there's two places. One of them got closed down because it was a real home Italian food, not like this nouveau, you know, out for Italian food.
Yeah, right. Let's swirl wine in a glass.
Exactly. That place got closed down. There used to be an incredible, authentic Japanese place that was open for 30 years.
I knew Italian restaurants on Mulberry Street. If anyone swirled wine, they would take it in the back and give it a whipping. They brought out water glasses and a jug of wine, and if you didn't drink it, they looked at you like you were crazy. And don't complain about it. I mean, in those days, if you asked for coffee, they gave you coffee. They didn't have 16 different labels for coffee. They never heard of any such thing.
It's a lot.
Either it was coffee or espresso. They said espresso or coffee. That's all. That's all they knew. They never heard of double squeezed frappuccino from the bean shipping from 4,600 feet in the mountains of the Himalayas with the special spring water flown in from Brooklyn. I never saw anything like these people.
It's a lack of respect and responsibility.
With Yama milk, with special pregnant Yama milk they want squeezed into the coffee cup, but it should be low fat on top of that, on top of it all.
Exactly.
Could you imagine drinking low fat pregnant Yama milk? I couldn't drink that stuff. Yet in San Francisco, it's part of a Frappuccino. You get in a coffee shop here, you could have a nervous breakdown till you reach the cashier. So what else is bothering you today? You called about the giggling Robert Gibbs, the spokesmouth for Obama. You told me there's no good food where, in Providence or New York?
Providence. And
you mean Chinese? You mean Chinese?
Chinese.
Right.
Italian.
The only places that you can get decent Chinese food are in San Francisco and New York, where there are large Chinese populations. But even there, you've got to kind of know where to go and watch your step.
Actually, there are a couple of small places that no one really knows about, like down in
Good. Alley. I don't really want to know about them right now. Thank you. I'll be right back. It is the one and only unique Savage Nation, the only talk show host in America not on vacation yet. But tomorrow is another day. Flying off into the infinity of the stratosphere, like everyone else, a lemming on the run, a lemming on the move. Air France crash findings released. Nothing. Nothing. They know nothing. Nothing. They found nothing. They find a black box, the pink box, the yellow box, nothing. No from nothing. It was reported by the French military, French Secret Service, that two radical Muslims were on the plane. That came out for about 3 minutes, and then it was swept under the rug by the swine in the media who didn't want you to put two and two together. They're supposed to believe it was a storm, even though we know that every plane goes through storms and doesn't, basically, you don't crash. Then they said lightning. Every 2 days, the idiots in the media said it was lightning, even though we found out later, as we all knew, that all planes are hit by lightning, and they don't crash. Then the schmucks in the media were told that it might have been something else, but we're going to find it. We didn't find it, but we don't know what it is. But any minute, we're going to find the pink box. The pink box wasn't found, but we can tell you definitively that we don't know anything about radical Muslims on the plane, and it's probably pilot error because they're dead anyway. So, in other words, you got nothing out of the press. They're on vacation as well. Okay, so that's why we're talking about everything under the sun on the Savage Nation. There are many stories we can cover. Los Angeles, KGIL, Stan, you're on the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, another ex-New Yorker talking to you.
Sorry to hear it.
By the way, you were just talking about that airplane crash. I have my degree in aeronautical engineering, so I know a little
you
about
do?
It.
You do? You actually went to college and learned something? You must be over 50.
I'm a decade older than you are, Dr. Savage.
You're a decade older than me, and you're an I love aeronautical engineering. What a great field.
It was a
what a great field. Now, wait a minute. If you're in your 70s. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
So when you went to college, it was in the 50s.
Well, I graduated in the early from New York University School of Engineering in the early 50s.
They don't have an engineering school anymore, do they? Now it's all dance therapy?
Mm-hmm. 1973, they sold it.
No, I'm saying in your days, NYU had a school of engineering. Today, they turned it into a school of dance therapy, I think.
Well, pretty much. We had the first Guggenheim School of Aeronautics in the country.
Amazing.
Harry Guggenheim and so on.
So let me ask you, wait, Stan, so you're a smart guy, highly educated, you live in L.A., and you listen to the show, and the reason you called is?
Well, I talk about any topic that you wanted to talk about.
That's good. That means you're bored to death already for the long weekend ahead of you.
Oh, not quite. I'm a pretty busy guy. I get a consummate do-it-yourselfer, so I keep busy.
But, no, Stan, I'm serious. Come on now. You live in L.A., you're an ex-New Yorker, and you're not a liberal. How'd that happen?
Well, I might be partially liberal.
All right, thank God. I was just testing to see because I was afraid that something was wrong with this picture, because a guy from your generation who went to NYU, if you're not part liberal, then something's wrong with the picture. All I care about is I don't care what a person's politics are, as long as they're willing to reason with me. Then we can get somewhere. And if I have a president, I don't care whether he's Democrat or Republican, if he's robbing the public, don't you think it's my obligation to point it out?
You betcha. And I
all right, so I did so for 8 straight years with Bush, and I have an obligation to tell you when I think that the Obama administration is screwing the public. Isn't that my job?
It certainly is. You know, when you talk about health plans, I'm a retired federal employee. Employees' health benefit plan. Anything they're talking about now can work against us.
Wait a minute. You mean the new health proposal that the great one is proposing will actually take away benefits from federal workers?
I believe so.
Well, yes, I would expect everyone's going to pay something in order to make certain that the 30 million illegal aliens get free medical care. Make no mistake about it, this plan is being put in place knowing what the next step is, which is granting illegal immigrant citizenship and putting all of them on the government health program. So who do you think is going to pay for them?
We will, of course.
Well, Stan, we're bankrupt as it is. How much more can we take?
Well,
I'm almost out of time. Stan, God bless you. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because of all the people who called today, you might like some of the stories. Stay on the line. And if you want to buy yourself a present for July 4th, you can't buy any of my books. It's too late. But you can buy them for July 9th on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to be off tomorrow. With God's will and your listenership, I'll be back sometime in the future.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, I was watching a there's a couple of channels I'm addicted to on television. I admit I watch my I'm going blind from the internet and television. It's sad. I'm addicted. I can't stop it. But that's the way it is. It's horrible. Everything's blurry. And then I watch military history almost incessantly, and I watch History Channel almost incessantly. And last night on HDTV, I was bored. I watched a thing on the occult in the Third Reich under Hitler, that, you know, it's alleged that Hitler was a Christian, and, excuse me, his henchmen were Christians, but you well know, and I well know, that they weren't. They had been born, of course, in Catholic nations or such, but they were all devout occultists, and they practiced the occult behind the scenes. Most Germans did not know that they were led by an occult maniac, Adolf Hitler, and were surrounded by Satanists. And to this day, they don't understand that they were surrounded by Satanists, nor do the American people themselves understand what was going on historically, because they don't teach any of this. They don't understand that most of the atrocities, not all of them, were carried out by the SS, who answered only to Hitler, separate from the Wehrmacht, which does not mean there were not atrocities conducted by the Wehrmacht, the German army, but it's important for you to understand this, to understand what was going on. These children were brainwashed in a Hitler youth from childhood on. Think about it. If a boy was born in 1920, he then fought in 1938, 1939, 1940. The state had him for virtually his entire developmental life. They brainwashed the child, first in the Hitler youth, then in another a program for the teenagers, then finally into the military itself. When I heard that Obama wanted to create a military unit or a special unit of children, a national service children, that will answer only to the White House, every nerve in my body went into overdrive. Do you remember that statement? Listen to it now if you don't. This was during the campaign. Guys, see if you can find that. It's very important for you to hear this. I can just say when you have it, whatever. I know I picked it out of the air. I don't expect you to have him. Listen to this, because this could be coming to a neighborhood near you. If you don't have it, you don't have it. But say you have it or don't, you're leaving me in the lurch here. Another 50 minutes, all right. Figure around 9 o'clock tonight I'll have it when I need it, when I'm passed out from exhaustion. Anyway, during the campaign, Obama gave himself away in many different ways. Reverend Wright was perhaps the most telling giveaway of who Obama is inside the head, between the ears, where it counts. You say it doesn't matter that a man sat in a church for 20 years and listened to vile anti-Americanism with a special twist of anti-whiteism? You say it doesn't matter? I say it does matter. I say he could have left at any time, and he didn't. And I warned you what was coming. And he also gave this speech. I want you to hear it again. Go ahead.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
A civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. That sounds like a little gentleman from Austria who wanted his own civilian security force, and he created it. It was called the Brown Shirts, and he funded it, and they fought for him, and they protected him. And they protected him not only from the political opponents, but from the military itself. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as I say, since this is the new way, since this is the new world order, since there's no stopping the tidal wave of lies, deceit, arrogance, and absolute un-Americanism emanating from the highest office, I think that it's time to get along and go along. And that's why I say today we're rechanging the Because the last thing we would want is to see me on a watch list of the Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA. I want them to understand that I'm a team player, that I'm not a loose cannon, that I'll get along and I'll go along. And so, as I say, whatever the government wants of me, I'm willing to do. And I'm even willing to go so far as to myself offer several initiatives. And one of them would be this. Although over the years I've called for stronger borders and the deportation of illegal aliens, I think today I'm going to call for the relocation of all white people who have lived here for more than 50 years in order to give the newcomers from the South a chance. Just for the sake of fairness and balance, we should force all whites over the age of 50 to leave the country, perhaps with their possessions, perhaps not, in order to give all of these newcomers from the South a chance, the newcomers who have put all the Democrats in power and have kept them there for these last 20 years. You see what I mean? It's time for them to appreciate the beauties of America, and it's time for those who've enjoyed this fair nation to move on. Time to pack up your kit bag and move along. Now it's time for the callers on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Michael's linked up from the failing San Francisco Chronicle, a newspaper that's losing $1.5 million a week, $1.5 million a week. It's not their money. They certainly won't change their policies. They'd rather be out of business collecting crazy checks in the cafes of San Francisco than ever recognize the fact that they drove their newspaper to bankruptcy. So there's an article about bedbugs in San Francisco. Apparently there's a bedbug epidemic in the city, and it's not just limited to single-room occupancy hotels anymore. Oh, no, it's in various neighborhoods now. It's way out of the cheap, poor neighborhoods. The bedbugs have proliferated throughout San Francisco, but there's no mention of where they came from. It's as though the bedbugs were created by spontaneous creation. You've heard of spontaneous emission, and of course you've heard of spontaneous combustion, but you've not heard of spontaneous creation yet. But according to the liberal, bedbugs may have been created by spontaneous creation, created simply out of the air in order to make immigrants look bad. I'll be right back. Sacramento, Fred, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, it is a privilege to talk to you.
Say something? I don't want to be a wise guy. It's not a privilege. I do it for a living. Without you, I'd have no show. Guys like Wallbanger need to hear that because they're insecure and have nothing else other than the radio. But go ahead, please.
Exactly. I know what people say, and it's not.
Well, you're right. A great American. Yeah, you're a real great one. You're a great American. Okay, go on, please.
We won't mention his name. I understand. Always prepare to be disappointed. You know, if you go out and have a meal, if you go here, go there, see people, always expect to be disappointed and hope for the best. But be prepared.
Oh. You know? Oh, in other words, don't expect to have a good time and a good meal.
Exactly.
And you know, well, actually, it's a philosophically correct way to approach restaurants, and now that you mention it. Expect to have bad food and a bad time.
Exactly. And then
well, here's how I drive around on the road now. If I get in my car, I have to go down a certain two-lane road to get to another location, right? Yeah. Inevitably, there are bicyclists with jester costumes on who like to ride in the middle of the road and block you even though you can't go around them, or they'll come speeding on the other lane. And if anyone gets behind him and swerves, they can cause a head-on collision. Normally, I honk my horn just to ruin their day because I hate them. Okay, I hate them because they're going to cause an accident. They're going to kill somebody. Mrs. S. tells me not to honk the horn. She says, don't bother. And I try not to when anyone's in the car. Even the dog doesn't like it. But I hate rude bicyclists because I bicycle and I keep all the way to the right because I don't want to get run over. I don't want to cause an accident. These people are the most snotty AHs you've ever seen. They're all from San Francisco. They all truck their bicycles out to Marin County, and then they ride like they own the road, and the cops do nothing. The CHP ought to do something about them, like take their tricycles away from them and put them in jail. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, what I do now is when I get on this road, I count to 10. I say to myself, you're going to have 10 incidents between point A and point B of rude bicyclists that are going to try and destroy your day. And you know what I do? I count now. I usually get to 2 before I start screaming and honking the horn.
The savage.
I never get past 2. By the second one, the fuse is gone. The fuse blew out. I say give it to 10, but usually by 2 or 3, it's over. I can't take it. I don't know what they're doing on the road, those bums. They all drive cars to bring the bicycle to the country road. Who are they fooling?
Exactly. You got to put that out of your mind, because why should that matter to you? But the thing is, me and you, we can't put that out of our minds. Because
I can't put it out of my mind because it's a matter of social disorder. What it is there's a social contract. If I pay taxes and I drive a car, my road should be clear. I'm paying taxes for the highway patrol to make sure these AHs do not block the lane. That if they do, they pick them up, take their tricycles, and throw them in the bay and arrest them. But the CHP doesn't do this for me. You understand? I pay grotesque taxes. Why do they not patrol the road, I ask myself, right?
I'm not brainwashed. I look at life the right way. I see things under the skin. I'm not all good. I'm looking at a beautiful day today. Well, it's a beautiful day today, but there's a lot of stuff.
What do you do if you go to a restaurant and next to you is a loud liberal who starts giving a lecture, a political lecture? How do you handle that? An Obama lover. See, I don't do politics in a restaurant. I'm very conservative, but when I go out to dinner, I never do politics. I don't talk at a table about politics because I would find it offensive if someone did it around me. Why is it that liberals usually shoot their mouths off about what Obama said or what the local liberal newspaper wrote? Why do they think I want to listen to that when they don't even know who I am? Why do they inflict themselves on everybody around them?
They want to look better.
Answer, because they can, because they know that you won't do anything about it. The fact is that I have a radio show. I am outspoken. Some would call me a loudmouth. But you have an option. You could turn the station off. You could turn on any other station right now, and you can get nothing but liberal pap for the rest of the day. When you go to a restaurant, you're a captive audience. And so, therefore, if someone does that, they are doing it strictly to be aggressive and rude and hostile. How do you deal with it? I'll give you an example. I knew a guy who went to a restaurant, and next to him was a couple with an infant. Usually the guy is over 50, balding, ponytail, with a somewhat, let us say, not whatever, a 35-year-old wife with an infant. Already she's the mother that she always wanted to be. She left the pointy shoes behind, and suddenly she discovered motherhood. And the baby is crying, and they do nothing about it, ruining everyone's meal in the restaurant. So this caller said to me, he got up, he told the owner, charge me, I'm leaving, and he put 10 bucks down on the guy's table right to his face. He got in his face, and he said, here, next time you go out, you can afford a babysitter, and he left. That's a classy thing, right? Do you think I complain too much? I got to ask you something. I'm doing like a lot of soul searching. I realize that I'm very anguished about society, and I'm never pleased by anything. I'm starting to realize that if I were listening, I'd actually like the show more because of it, because you got to think about the dynamics of it. I take a risk by sharing with you my displeasures, right? On the other hand, you say, well, why would anyone listen to that? The answer is because they're filled with such displeasure in their daily life that they like to hear that I also experience it, even though I shouldn't. The point is I shouldn't. I do have everything. You know, I drive around in my car and I see various bumper stickers. And some of them are like these self-help bumper stickers. I almost did a dyslexic thing, a self-help thing. Which say, what are you grateful for? And it stops you in your tracks. So sometimes when I'm lying in bed, grousing about how miserable my life is, I say to myself, what am I grateful for? And I have a big list of what I'm grateful for. And it stops me. It's not bad. Some of this self-help, pseudo-Christian stuff is pretty good. I like it. And it works for me. But it doesn't stop me from complaining. For example, if I go to a restaurant, I move tables several times. Do I do it for effect? No. I do it for reasons that make sense. I mean, like last night I went to a local restaurant, and it was pretty empty. I come in, the table's there. Right away I see two things I don't like, and I ask Mrs. F. S. to move with me. She's used to it, of course. Why did I move? Because behind her in the other booth to her head, the back of her head, was an older guy, younger woman, lovey-dovey, showing it couple. I didn't want to listen to them. I saw the bottle of wine. I saw the swirling of the glass from the trailer park trash that he picked up somewhere and he already turned into the second missus. I didn't want to watch it. To my left was a loud older couple that I knew were just getting dessert, and they were gassed up on the wine. I knew with two glasses of cheap wine and the sugar, I didn't stand a chance to digest so much as a pinto bean. I moved. Am I wrong for expressing this to you? Am I wrong for moving? The answer is no. I have to move tables in a restaurant to get where I want to sit, or I don't want to go. It's not that I'm doing it to be difficult. Do you do that as well? Does anyone else live this way, or am I the only one on earth who does this in a restaurant? Number two, the children, thank God for them, made it to adulthood. They're adult children. I want to thank God that they did get this far. But they knew by the time they were a certain age, like 8 or 9, that when we checked into a hotel on vacation, they knew that whatever room we were given was only the first room. They didn't even unpack their bag after a few years. They would put the bag in the room and say, Dad, we'll be back in a while. Let us know what room you're actually going to be in. Because inevitably, the first room was no good. It's what hotels do to families. They hate families. There's a secret. They hate families. They hate traditional families. And inevitably, the snotty bell clerk or whoever it was, desk guy, they always gave us a roomie the next to construction. I would call from thousands of miles away. Is it a quiet room? Yes, sir. Is there any ongoing construction? No, sir. Have you sprayed the room with pesticides, perfume, or any other pungent components before we get there? Because we all don't want to. No, sir. We understand it's a scent-free room. Anything else, sir? Whatever you ask for, they give you the opposite. So I'd get there. Next door would be heavy construction with a pile going in right out the window. The room would have been sprayed by somebody from another country for whom a room must smell like a cat house in Tijuana on a July day. And of course, and then to top it all off, there'd usually be some kind of stain of a bodily fluid underneath the bed cover when you pulled back. That happened to me, I swear to you, I told you about it. We went to Cancun last winter. End room, good air, everything fine. I knew something was wrong. I pulled back the bed cover. It looked like the horse's head from The Godfather had been removed prior to my arrival. Is there any wonder I moved?
Savage.
Now let's go to the callers. Fort Lauderdale, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you're not the only one who lives by that code of complaining. You are like a carbon copy of listening to my dear old dad. And it's like you
all right, now, but here, okay, I accept it. I'm an older guy in radio. In fact, I'm probably at this point the most senior member of the talk radio clan, even though we all hate each other and are jealous of each other. I am the most senior member. But do you find it bad radio or good radio to listen to my problems?
I find it wonderful and captivating because it brings up just so many wonderful memories and of my relatives from the Bronx and family vacations that turned to misery and lousy hotels.
Oh, it's like, your family vacations that turned to misery. That is such. Why does that make me happy? What's wrong with me?
I don't know, but, you know, I've been in many a room. I was Williamsburg, Virginia. We were baited and switched where we got a bum room next to a railroad track. And my
and I'll bet when you call in advance, you told them quiet room, and they said yes, sir, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was, you know, it was the second coming of Valhalla, and we ended up in some podunk flea bag motel.
So in other words, my complaints, although they're kind of tiresome, they're actually real, and you like listening to them because they're based on reality.
Affectionately, and my family revert to them as my father's observations. They're no longer.
So when your father took you on vacation, you changed rooms a couple of times each trip?
Absolutely. We changed hotels.
Oh, he was a step ahead of me.
Oh, he's.
I didn't have the gumption to take the kids to another whole building. Although I was close to it a few times. What was your father like in a restaurant? How many tables a night?
I was just going to get to that. How about this? He's the kind of guy that would be barking out rebuttals to these New England ponytail, Oxford shirt-wearing liberals. He'd be behind.
What do you mean? He would listen to them at other tables?
Oh, he would eavesdrop, and then he would chime in something. He would retort.
Oh, so he would actually take them on at the other table.
Okay, here's a priceless story. You'll get a kick out of this. We're in a supermarket parking lot. A kind of a young man's car drives by with that South Beach techno music blaring. The person in the passenger car has long hair. So my father says, hey, lady, you're a little old to be playing that kind of music, aren't you? Well, anyway, the car parks, and out gets this Fabio-looking man.
Oh, a muscular guy with long hair. Here it comes.
Yeah. So the South Boston Irish came out of my father, and it was a sight to behold.
Well, what happened? Now you got me on the edge of my seat. What happened?
They exchanged words, and in order to make the peace, my father didn't know really how to do it, so he bought him a flower. He said, because I don't know what to make of you. So he bought him a
flower.
Yeah,
but the guy didn't take a swing at your father. He probably knew the guy. Your father was just a guy with strong opinions and guts.
My father's a tough South Boston Irish guy. Cop for 25 years, Vietnam veteran. He doesn't take lip service.
Yeah, but wait a minute. In his 60s, he could have gotten his butt whipped by the young Fabio, right?
Oh, absolutely not. My father.
What do you mean? Your father could have beaten up the Fabio character?
My father scares the death out of me, and I'm a grown man.
Oh, you mean your father's still with us?
Yes, my father's. I have the pleasure of my company of my father routinely. Thank
God. You're a lucky man. Oh, you're lucky that he's still living.
And again, I want to thank you for just, you know, bringing me down with those memories and just, you know, all the guys from New York.
Hey, let me ask you, Michael, the weather in Fort Lauderdale's been very rainy in the last few months, right? It's on and off every day?
On and off every day, 3 o'clock, like clockwork. And my summer baseball program, we're getting rained out.
Because I'm planning on going to Florida soon. I know in the summer. Why? Because the water's 85 degrees, that's why. But the rain is keeping me away.
I would love to take you tarpon fishing.
Yeah, it'll be a one-way trip. It's a Sicilian fishing trip, a one-way trip, huh?
Absolutely not. I would love to take you into some pristine country and the back country and teach you how to fish for tarpon and bonefish and be in places.
That's
where
amazing. So you do the real McCoy. What kind of boat do you use?
I use a Hughes, a 19-foot flat skiff with a tunnel hull, so I don't.
Oh, you're a real fisherman.
I moved down here from Boston specifically.
Yeah, and you thought you were getting away from the liberals, huh?
No, I moved into Liberal Central.
Yes.
Thank God I
Fort Lauderdale, the whole area of South Florida is so communistic, it's frightening.
Este es porque yo hablo español, señor.
No, except for the Cubans. And by the way, the young Cubans are already twisted in their brains. They're half Castroites.
Actually, you know what? The Cubans down here, every one of them in their shops has an American flag. Every one of
yes,
them
the older Cubans are patriotic. Rock rib conservatives. The younger ones have been brainwashed by America.
Children I teach, Dr. Savage, they are wonderful. They are patriots. They get it. They listen to their grandmothers and grandfathers about the Russian shoes and the guys being yanked out of their houses for saying the wrong thing and a chivato on every corner. They get it. And the kids that I teach are wonderful.
What do you teach, Michael?
I teach mathematics.
Oh, God bless you. Yep, well, they don't make him like your father anymore.
And
hey, Michael, did you read that story of the cop from the Bronx, the detective for 22 years, and what happened to him with that punk, the kid who shot someone in an elevator in the face?
Yeah, and then I want to know how the kid got an MP3 player into the interrogation room.
All right, now, I talked about this last night at home, and you know what the smartest woman in the world told me? She said someone set that detective up inside the police station. In other words, if they frisked the punk after finding him and it was a slam dunk case, then they send the detective in. What was he, like a Serpico? He was one of these honest cops just doing his job and the other guys in the department were on the take? Because they should have gotten that MP3 player out of his pocket.
Absolutely. Mrs. S. is very insightful, Dr. Savage.
Well, all right. So somebody set that cop up. But I want to say on this show, Michael, if they take the cop down and take away his pension, I'm going to make a contribution. I'm going to do a defense fund for him.
We'll put it up on the website. I'll chip in.
God bless, Michael. Hold on. Michael, stay on the line. I want to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for yourself and your children and your dad for the week. What a great caller that is. I'll be right back. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you would go absolutely stir crazy if you didn't live in such a liberal town. I moved from Ann Arbor, which is like mini Leningrad, to a little village called Dexter, about 10 miles west. And I go to Ann Arbor daily. It's like going to a trip to the zoo. I see the freak show.
Yeah.
And yes.
You have to look at the Obama bumper sticker, Prius driving freak liars, hypocrites from hell.
I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said, I'm already against the next war.
That's nice. Yeah, they're already against everything, aren't they? Except, well, let's leave it at that. Look, the fact of the matter is, I have people say to me, why do you live in such a liberal city if you have such distemper with it? And I say, I am reminded of what Voltaire, the great French writer, said, is that he lives in Paris in order to document their foibles. In other words, how could he write about the foibles of the Parisian of his time if he didn't live around them?
Exactly. Cannon fodder.
Well, I wouldn't say cannon fodder. I'd say grist for the mill.
Well, there you go.
Enjoy Ann Arbor. Go have a double frappuccino espresso with beans raised at 4,600 feet with distilled water and cows that are raised on the moon. You ever hear them go into a coffee shop? It's not like your father says, give me a cup of coffee. Have you ever heard these people, how sick they are when it comes to a coffee? I'll take a double espresso latte, de-phrase, de-frappiano, frappadano, with distilled water with cows that are raised by organic goats in heaven. And on that side, I mean, I never heard anything like this. Never. It's San Francisco to a T, which is why I love it so much. But here we are near July 4th already. And we got the Chinese restaurant story, the Japanese, the Thai. And, you know, you could say no goo if you want. You say no oil and no sugar. But you know what you get instead. You get the horse glue. If you say you don't want no oil, you know what you get in the dish instead. Extracted hoof from like a slaughterhouse horse is what they give you if you're not careful. You got to be careful, too, what you say. Because they're controlling what's going in your mouth. You say low oil. Okay, we'll give them low oil. Get the shoe glue from the dead horse in the back. Kansas City, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I hear you asking if you complain too much. And I've been making an observation for some time now that really bothers me, and I just was wondering if you've made it too. I walk into an Asian restaurant, and I can always tell a table full of liberals, even before they even utter a single word about the woes of the world and how terrible it is that people have the right to be miserable. But they'll order their food, and then they'll ask the waiter, who probably grew up in America and has never even been to China. They'll ask him, how do I say that in Chinese?
Oh, God. Oh, to show that they're in solidarity with the immigrant. I love that.
Then they'll get their chopsticks, because they'll have to ask for them because the flatware.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's to show that they're politically able to use chopsticks.
Yeah. So then they get out their chopsticks and they rub them together to try to take off all the splinters and everything.
Yes.
I've never actually seen an Asian do that.
Yeah, even though I've never seen a splinter on a chopstick, they heard about it in 1971.
Yeah, yeah. And so then while they're doing this, they're completely oblivious to the fact that there's a table full of staff from the restaurant sitting there and using forks to eat their lunch. Meanwhile, the waiters...
Well, you must live near a university town for this to be going on. These are classic university behaviors.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then on top of that, the waiters, the only reason why they're speaking Chinese is because they're mocking these liberal dummies because they look like little kids because they're dropping food all over themselves and the table and the floor because they don't know how to use the chopsticks.
And the waiters are laughing about them and goofing on them in Chinese.
It makes me so disgusted. It's just disgusting.
Well, but look, Mike, you got to do what the last caller said. You just got to go there and watch the human comedy. I mean, liberals are the most laughable subpopulation in America. They don't understand it, but everyone else is laughing at them. They're social freaks because of their hypocrisy and their childishness.
Yeah, you were talking about how they talk about politics.
But do they, your people over there, the libs in Kansas City in a Chinese restaurant, do they generally bow when they walk in? Don't they give a short little bow in their hands together?
I've actually seen that once.
Once. How about when the waiter gives them a glass of water? Do they all say thank you 50 times for the glass of water?
Oh, yeah, but not only that, they have to have hot oolong tea on a 110-degree August day.
Oh, well, that's appropriate. What about the napkin? When the waiter gives them the napkin, don't they all bow and say thank you 50 times? Oh, thank you. Oh, everything the waiter does, they give them a thank you. And when they pay, they say thank you to the owner of the restaurant. Instead of the owner saying thank you to them for the business, they thank him for letting them in the restaurant. How about that one?
Well, you know, Michael, the last time this happened, it was a date, and this guy was doing it to show off to his date. And at the end of the meal, after having to watch this and listen to his rhetoric and how happy he was about all the politics and everything that's going on, even though he seems to understand politics, but he can't even use a pair of chopsticks. After the meal was done, we both went up to the cashier to pay for our meal at the end. And I asked him, he didn't know I knew the owner, and I've known him for years. But I asked him how he liked the restaurant, and he said, oh, it's great. I said, you know, it used to be smoking, but it's not anymore. And I said, you know, so they didn't actually have to participate in the smoking ban. And I said, it's a good thing that smoking ban finally went through, huh? And he said, yeah, I voted for that. And I was like, yeah, I figured that. Well, you know, I find your speech as offensive as you found people smoke. I don't want to listen to your political rhetoric when I'm eating my meal.
Oh, really? And what did the guy say to that?
He just sat there and stared at me. And I just like, whatever, paid my meal and went out. You know,
Here's the last question of the day. Ask your friends in the Chinese restaurant what percent of the bill is tipped by liberals. What percent tip they leave.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I heard you say that once, and I asked them that because I was curious. And, yeah, they're pretty stingy.
Usually libs give a maximum of 8 or 9%. That's if they're not caught, if they don't run out of the restaurant entirely and leave it to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the worst tippers in America are the ones who are the most socially progressive. They're the biggest cheats in the country. But that's neither here nor there. We got bigger problems than that. Latest came out is the president, so-called, of Honduras, who the people threw out because he was a bum and a dictator, who Chavez supports, who Obama supports, who Hillary supports, who Castro supports. That president, that man that our president supports, has just been linked to drug ties. When I'm off the air, what matters to me, sure, I get steamed up over the news, but inevitably I have to stop it because nobody wants to listen to it. They can't take it. They cannot. So if I go to a restaurant, which I do, unfortunately, more than I should, I mean, I love food, so what am I going to do? You can't cook every night. I have to move tables, or I go to a hotel. I don't go anymore. I used to when the kids were young. I'd move rooms. We were talking about that. And I asked you, do you mind me telling you about it? And I got such wonderful callers that really, I mean, they were great listening to. I could see why you like listening to me. Because I'm not the only one who does this. I think that everybody would like to have the guts to do it, but they don't have the nerve to do it. It's not that they don't know that the table's bad or that the food stinks. It's not that they don't want to bother. They don't want to upset themselves and everyone around them, so they don't do it. It doesn't mean that you're a bad guy. But I think if more of us demanded better service, better food, I think there'd be less to complain about. I really do. I'll give you a little example, a minor example. Let's reduce it to the real Lilliputian level. Since I can do nothing about the Marxist Party USA under Obama, I can do a lot about which seat I have in a restaurant and what food I get, all right? Now, I don't go out of my way to make a trouble. I don't want trouble. I'll give you an example. There's a hole-in-the-wall Thai restaurant near where I live, a dump of the lowest order, but it's clean. The owner's a nice guy. I've watched his daughter grow up from the time she was a kid to college age. So, you know, a little hole-in-the-wall. I patronize it once a week, whatever. The food is actually very good. And when I go in there, it reminds me of being in the third world, which I like. It reminds me of my years as being a poor graduate student in Fiji. I sit in the back. It's got ugly mirrors like from a museum with palm trees in it. It's so retro bad that it's refreshing because they don't try to be what they're not. You know what I mean? There's no orchids on the table. It's like oil cloth with plastic. But him and his wife cooks, and he has no personality whatsoever. One of the most personality-less owners I've ever seen in my life. He probably owns the entire shopping center. All right, so I go in there. I got tired of everything else. I go in there. I got into a Thai jag. I went already twice in a row last week. So I said, I'm going nuts. So the next day I figured I would be really wild and I order a takeout dish. That's after he knew me now. Every time I go and he says, someone wants to buy you a six-pack of beer, and I say to him, no, thank you, I don't need it, blah, blah, blah. I go in there. I eat a good meal. The next night, I don't want to go out, so I call up and I say, it's me, how you doing? I order a takeout dish. He cheats me again. It's half the size. So I started to steam up. I said, what's wrong with this man? When I'm in there, he says nice things to me, gives me a nice dish. He cannot help it. If you order takeout, you get half the size. You get half the size. One shrimp, two shrimp maximum, in a shrimp dish that costs $10.95. And if you order the chicken curry, it's about a piece and a half of chicken that must cost them a nickel, if that much. So I said to myself, should I call this jerk and tell him, or should I just let it go and not eat there anymore? And I said, wait a minute, I like the guy's food. I couldn't help myself. I call him up. And I say, hey, Johnson, listen to me. This is Michael. How are you? I said, you just cheated me on a takeout dinner. He says, oh, no, 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 no. I said, oh, yes, 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 yes. He said, I told the cook it's for you. I said, well, she screwed me. She gave me two shrimp and a piece of chicken the size of my thumb. No, 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 he says. And I say, yes, yes, yes. And I said, the reason I'm calling you is because I like you. And I said, if you do this to people who you know, you're going to have no business left. I said, but you're not going to see me for a long time. All right, so maybe I shouldn't have done it. Why must a man cheat me on takeout dinners? Why is it in general I find the takeout food they give you a screwing on? Why is that? They don't know you? If you're ordering takeout food and you tell them who you are, they should give you more, not less. They can't help it. There's something going on in restaurants. Maybe they're desperate. I don't really know. But today, I'll tell you, I got the opposite. There's a Japanese in the neighborhood that I ordered from. Usually good. They gave me a screwing about a week ago. I called them screaming because they're always too busy. They're always yelling. So I said, slow down. I'm trying to order dinner. Stop screaming. I order a dinner. There was no seafood. It's called a seafood yaki udon. It was yucky udon, let me tell you that. It was seafood yucky udon. There was like nothing in it except greasy vegetables. So I complained. So today I called on for this order. There's Franken complaining. Get a walk. He was never a Republican anyway. Why do I care what he does? He's got a weird-looking face, doesn't he? What's his name? Coleman. Coleman is as weird-looking as Franken. I got to tell you the truth. Coleman's face looks as weird as Franken's face. It matters to me who wins in Minnesota. They deserve Al Franken in Minnesota.
Savage.